This is the Plot Blueprint Podcast, where we will be discussing all sorts of aspects of story.
So now we're at the last letter in SPICE, which is E for emotion. And we've talked about the setting, we've talked about plot, we've talked about idea and character. Now we come kind of boiling it down in a way to the most highly distilled thing, which is pure feeling, emotion. And of course, you can, you probably, it's difficult to have emotion without character, I'd say. So this is obviously very closely entwined with character. But I think the difference is that you can start out by saying, I want to explore the emotion of blank before you, and then you find a character who exemplifies that. So why would you want to do this? Have you ever done anything like that, James? Started a book with...
I don't think so. I think another time that you would start with emotion is certain genres. Like if you're...
Yeah, horror.
Yeah, if you're writing noir, like you already know what the emotional tone going into the story is going to be. Horror, noir, I mean...
And suspense.
Yeah.
They name it. Suspense. Yes. That's an emotion. Horror, that's an emotion. Noir, not quite so much, but noir is a tone that is connected with emotion.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think that I haven't finished the book yet. Haven't gotten very far. Yeah, I have. It's a story where I wanted to start out with someone who felt a certain way. It wasn't necessarily emotion, but felt, what's the word, dispossessed, felt thrown away, felt like she didn't belong. And, you know, I did start that with the emotion. And, well, why, what sort of person would feel this? And why did I want that? I think because it was part of a spy trilogy. And so this was, so I already had the basic thing that this was going to be a spy story. And wanted to start with an emotion that might lead someone to be choosing to be a spy. And someone who doesn't feel she belongs and all that. But I think fairly quickly I got the character. But I agree. I mean, the most important reason you'd start with emotion first is probably something personal you want to explore. And the number one thing I'd say is grief. Grief is something that I have found with my writing clients, if they are in that kind of stuck grief where you're not really processing through what you're sort of stuck in it, it's almost impossible to write. It completely diverts your creativity. And so you might write about grief in order to process the grief and kind of clear the pathway so you can be creative again. I've seen that happen. It's sort of an amazing thing to see someone really almost their creativity comes back to life. But so you write about grief and you write, so you have to, you know, come up with a situation and a character, or you might even write about the person, you know, that your mother died, you want to write about your mom. You write a little essay about her or something like that. And that might be enough. But you're writing about the emotion of grief in order to process it. And I would just say that's probably the emotion I think that seems to inspire an awful lot. I think of the movie Solaris. And I think of the second one. I haven't seen the first one, which is Russian. But the one that George Clooney is in. And his wife committed suicide. He also feels kind of guilty about it. But basically, it's grief. And so you have all this loneliness of being out in space. But it's really about grief. It's about losing. And it confronts him with this. You have the chance to get her back, but only if you pretend. So you have to give up reality in order to process. So it started with the emotion of grief, but it ended up with an idea.
So I don't... I haven't read Solaris. I just know that my Russian history through pop culture professor did not like the American version.
Yeah, I think that it's the Russian version of Soviet, maybe that old, I think was considered superior. But then you had written down For Grief Afterlife. Is that a game?
I don't know what I was talking about.
Okay, what was that?
An emotional game that really, there's a mobile game called Florence. It's a mobile game, but it's actually good. But it's not really about one emotion, because main character Florence, you know, in Act One meets, you know, this boyfriend that she falls in love with, and then the second act is, you know, their relationship, and then the third, which the main part is her getting over them breaking up. But so that's, but I mean, so the point of that was sort of grief, moving heartbreak. On, heartbreak.
Yeah, there've been a lot written about that. I mean, there's only country songs and novels, but think of, you had, there was some film that the one that takes place in the bayou, is that Annihilation? In a swamp.
Yes, but shot in England somehow.
But that seemed to me to be about grief, that she lost her husband and she's seeking. You know, how do you process grief? How do you work through it? And all these films and stories that are about recovering the lost person. Pet Cemetery.
So I remembered. Afterlife isn't a video game. It's a show written and started by Ricky Gervais on Netflix, which is, mm-hmm. it's about getting over the loss of his wife. And, you know, he's just the man who is, he literally even says, the only reason I haven't killed myself is that I promised her I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking in Dollhouse, the television series, Joss Whedon television series Dollhouse, that we both like very much, there's the one where Patton Oswalt, which is very interesting because his wife ended up dying young recently, and so he actually had to go through this.
Solve the murder.
Yeah, solve the murder. Yes, it's a wonderful story, but very sad. But yes. in that Dollhouse episode, he plays a man who is so paralyzed with grief emotionally that he tries to regain even just one moment of the time he had with his wife before she died. And so I think that, in fact, everything we talk about with grief, so much of it is about regaining or getting past it, getting through it, finding some, trying to regain. There's a book, it was the first Oprah book, and it was The End, The Other Side of the Ocean, and by Jacqueline Michard. And it's quite good. It's actually based on a real event. I think it's based on this. My Name is Kevin was the book the boy wrote. A boy was kidnapped when he was 7 or 8 and held by a terrible man for a long time. And then he escapes when the man tries to kidnap another boy, so a child, a little boy. And he showed up at the police department holding this child and saying, "My name is Kevin." And so the book is sort of based on this idea that someone could be gone for 7 or 8 years. And the family never has gotten over it. And so the book starts with grief and this absolute unbearable grief. And then this incredible joy when he comes back. And then the kind of realization that things, you never get over trauma. You can get past it and all that. But that's sort of like, of all these things we're talking about grief, so much of it is, how can I get it back? How can I get even one more moment with this person? And which is supposed to remind us, you've got to live while you can, and be good to each other while you can, because it might be taken away. But in that one, the child actually comes back, and so there's this great relief. The actual the story of this family is in real life is far, far more dramatic. I don't want to say why. Well, one of the children actually ended up being the Yosemite murderer. Do you remember that? Where a woman and two girls were killed by him. That was him. Which is strange. It's not the boy who had the terrible trauma, but the younger brother. So the actual story of that family is a lot more dramatic than the book is. But the book, just, I remember reading it and feeling this great depth of grief. And really, I thought it captured it very well, what it feels like. Soul Survivor by Dean Koontz is probably the best book I almost couldn't bear to finish. Because it's about a man whose wife and two daughters are killed in a plane crash, and how, and it's a big plane crash. And I think actually this is also based on an actual event of one of those plane crashes that I think came down because of a bomb. But there's a part where he's walking in, like in a pharmacy, and he's sure he sees his wife. And he's consciously aware that this is what happens when you're grieving, is that you see the person everywhere. And he still cannot keep himself from going up and, you know, making sure it's not her. And then feeling that terrible gulf of grief again. And but I will say, Soul Survivor, it's S-O-L-E, is probably the story that's that I would say of all these stories, which is most deals with grief most comprehensively, because he ends up kind of parenting a child and who was the sole survivor of that plane crash.
So I realized I don't think I wrote anything more than the first scene, but I definitely had a premise that I was starting out with the emotion, the concept of grief, and that it was going to be this couple, this woman and this man separately, their loved ones, like, you know, we have to, like, you have to leave your apartment or your house or whatever, and that they both just become, you know, not really agoraphobic, because they're not afraid of the outside world, but they, so they were husband and wife, and I guess, like, in two separate parallel dimensions, the other survived a car crash or something, and so that's
a good idea.
That they can't really like interact with each other, but they can see each other
in the apartment. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, but I never did anything.
Well, there's grief, but there's also hope, and so that would be really interesting. I do think that there are certain emotions which could by themselves kind of inspire this stuff, and we see this in poetry, as I said. Of course, you see it in country music, All My Sons, the Miller play, Arthur Miller play, is about grief, because just one son died in the war, and the whole family is unable to move past that. There's also guilt thrown in because it was sort of the fault of the father. But that's, I think that there's a reason why grief is the one, the emotion I think really does inspire so much, so that it in itself can inspire stories, because it's something you have to get. It's so hard to move through and move past.
Yeah, so I even just remembered more. So that was, it was going to be sort of an evolution of a short story that I wrote by hand in a notebook in high school.
Yeah, I was thinking high school, you probably write a lot out of emotion.
Yeah, which is, that notebook is for sure, like, non-existent anymore, a video game that comes to mind, which I don't know if when writing the script they started with the emotion, but certainly have often said that The Last of Us, the theme is love, which, so if your theme is an emotion, you probably started out choosing the emotion of the story you want to write. The Last of Us really, like, they get through all of the obstacles that are forced upon them through love. So
I'm wondering whether we have more, whether the emotion that inspires stories is more likely to be a negative one. I'm thinking of anger too, and maybe this Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, which was a nameless young black man goes to. It starts with his, you know, when he's in high school, and at every stage, he's put in a position where who he really is and all he can really do is stopped because of racism, and the anger, just well, we were talking about raisin in the sun. You know what happens to a raisin in the sun? Well, it grows and it bursts and explodes, and that this idea of the anger as the as an emotion you can write about. I think that is I can definitely see that, like grief, it's something you have to work through, something that, but it's far more probably powerful in the sense that it powers the plot so much more. And so I don't know. I think that those are, I don't want to say that anger is necessarily a negative emotion, but I think others like fear, you know, there's lots of movies which are about fear, but I think there's one, Duel, which was Steven Spielberg's first film.
Yes.
Dennis Weaver's in it. And it's very much about the faceless fear. I mean, there are all the entire horror genre and all the Friday the 13th stuff. It's meant to inspire fear. But what is it that a riot where you have fear is the what it starts with? In Duel, it's a guy in a car driving across the country, and some guy in a semi starts pursuing him. And it becomes more and more and more terrifying. And that was, it was really an interesting film because we get to know almost nothing about either of the characters. I mean, we know that the truck driver's faceless. We don't get to know much about Dennis Weaver specifically, I think, because he's supposed to be universal. He's supposed to be us. He's supposed to be the human being who's being chased. And so that I think is an example of how fear could be turned into that. Edgar Allan Poe had a couple, stories like that, the Black Cat and the Telltale Heart, those ones where it's all about the fear of being discovered his characters never feel guilt, but I think fear of being discovered is sort of a very primeval thing that later might in the history of humanity evolve into guilt.
I mean, all of his characters are psychopaths.
Yeah, I mean, so that's one of the most aspects of that.
Or they're the victim.
Okay, well, let's think of guilt. Is guilt an emotion? Yes, it is. You know, I mean, it's something you feel. And shame is an emotion. But I think shame is not something that inspires. That inspires you to withdraw into yourself and hide more. So I don't think that you'd necessarily write too much about shame. Guilt, though, I think, you know, could make you more expressive, could be a more expressive emotion to deal with. So I was thinking of things that, especially films I've seen, like 27 Days and I Am Legend, the Will Smith movie, that seemed to be about loneliness, about being the only one.
Yeah, which is why I Am Legend specifically, they ruined the ending.
How did they do this?
Well, so the original, not just the original scripted ending, but the original cut of the movie, he is alone. He is the Omega Man, which is what I Am Legend is, the story I Am Legend is based on, until he realizes that he realizes the zombie things are evolving and have an intelligence, and that so the way he saves humanity is to help them, instead of what we got in the ending, that even though he's supposed to be the Omega Man, oh no, there's this whole society off somewhere, okay, whatever, it's happy almost, ending.
It's almost as if the film could not deal with this great void that's loneliness, and actually it's just like, hey, we're gonna create some, you know, some people that you can be with, because it's too sad, especially after the spoiler alert, the dog dies. Okay, you have to admit that was almost unbearable.
It was,
but they could have just let him keep the dog.
No, you can't,
because you gotta make him miserable.
Yes, Will Smith is not allowed to be happy.
Yes, I guess not in that movie anyway. But that's a really good thing, that you can almost see that it's just like, this is too hopeless. We can't leave it this way. We can't have it just be utterly hopeless. So that's maybe one of the things we want to say about emotion is you really need to know what you're dealing with. You need to let it happen. You need to have it be a full experience. And it could be unbearable. And I will say that Dean Koontz, that Soul Survivor book, was very close to unbearable. If it wasn't written so well, and the story, the plot wasn't so involving, I probably would not have been able to finish it. Especially because the first 100 pages is like one long howl of grief.
Yeah, that's the show Afterlife is really like that as well, which is why I'll never watch it
again.
Like,
it's like, oh, it's really good, but I can't do it.
I mean, just like the Joker, the movie, the Joker, you know, loneliness. Isolation. I'd say it's more about isolation through mental illness. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just so depressing the entire time. That it's a good movie. I understand some of the criticisms people have towards it, but that doesn't take away any of it of the quality of the filmmaking and or how well written the script is and how great Joaquin Phoenix's performance is. That being said, it is start to finish just dark and depressing, and just it's almost like more of a physical assault than actually watching a movie. So I'm probably never going to watch it again.
I wonder if the stories that we thought were extremely good but we can't do again, maybe that the genesis of that feel is some kind of emotion.
Yeah.
Because Schindler's List is another one. And that's horror. I mean, the horror that human beings could do this to each other. That was a great, great movie. I will never watch it again. Which is kind of a shame. But I think that it's especially if you're kind of empathetic and you actually feel these things, you're able to participate in the feelings of the characters a lot, which probably most fiction writers are. It can, you know, that thing where you see this thing and you're walking around depressed for the next 3 or 4 days. This is no way to live a life.
Right? Yeah, I mean, especially since there are movies like 1917, which is incredibly emotional, but it is also kind of, it's not even that it's happier necessarily. It's just
World War One. It's hard to feel happy.
Yeah, it's just less physically depressing than The Joker or Schindler's List.
Little Women, which, you know, was deep in my childhood, was truly a traumatic experience for me reading that, but yet I kept reading it. I read it over and over, and every single time I had the same response to it. And that, although I don't think that's about grief, I think it is about love, and so maybe that's why we can read it over, even though it's very, very sad and all that, that the truth is it's not about grief, it's about love, it's about, you know, if there's certainly grief, but it's because they love Beth, and so the grief is just an outgrowth of the love. So I think that's certainly a positive emotion, so maybe that's why even as sad as that is, it's not depressing.
Which, so that'll be interesting, because as I said, The Last of Us, as Neil Druckmann and Naughty Dog has said, the theme of The Last of Us is love, but the theme of The Last of Us 2 is hate. So I wonder if, which, just the very little that we've seen of that game up to this point, it is for sure going to be one of the greatest, it's going to be considered one of the greatest games ever made, for sure.
But it's sort of hard to imagine that it couldn't be hate.
So I'm saying, Naughty Dog, don't beef this, or else I'll look real stupid.
I was thinking that hate would be, you almost have to kind of think, I'm not sure, would Hitler, Leni Riefenstahl, did she, you know, his favorite filmmaker, did she, but hers was much more, as I say, triumph of the will. It was almost a sort of faux universe kind of thing of the Nazis in their sort of some kind of idealized thing that had nothing to do with hate. No, it's all about triumph.
Japan at the same time was using the exact same type of propaganda and, you know, the samurai spirit. And it turns out it's a lot easier to manipulate people if you convince them that you're a victim. Here is a target for you to take out that anger on.
I just saw the first episode of Picard, which is on CBS, and it's Jean-Luc Picard 20, 30 years later. And one of the things that came out is, okay, the no spoiler here, the beginning, there's the 30 years ago, there was a supernova, and all the Romulans were going to die, and he helped evacuate some of them. And then...
wasn't that the end of Next Generation? How did Next Generation end?
I don't remember. Okay, they were our enemies. Why are you helping them? They're our enemies. And so there's this great act of love. And then the Siths, while this is happening, they turn evil. The androids turn evil and do something to Mars and stuff. And it's like, and I saw that and I thought, there is the need in the human to always have an enemy. And the moment you help your enemy, well, you got to create another enemy, apparently. And I thought, that's hate. In a way, that's hate. It's we would dress it up, but certainly that does seem like it's that you can write about hate. And I don't just mean that, you know, a Hitler kind of propaganda thing, but you can imagine that, Death Wish. Remember that? I had that down as about revenge, but it's really about hate.
Yeah, I mean, but it's the hate leads to,
or revenge leads to, yeah, they're very closely that, and which is why when you see a film like that, you always just like, should I have to go take a shower now because I feel kind of dirty having enjoyed it?
It's very much like Yoda said, that, you know, the fear leads to hate, and the hate leads to the dark side.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, so I mean, obviously, operating out of emotion or trying, I would say, you know, there's danger in, especially when you're talking about emotions that inspire people to cause other people harm, that it's something that I think writers have to be careful about. You know, it's so easy to get people to hate. And I think it's kind of impressive how few of us with the talent to, you know, write stories that inspire people to feel something, how few of us actually write things to inspire hatred. But I don't think it'd be that difficult.
I think it's a lot easier to get your audience to hate the bad guy than it is to get them to love the good guy.
Yeah.
So I think unless you do it well, just relying on hate as the emotion is kind of a crutch. Mm-hmm. And I think unless you do it well, and then your story doesn't need a crutch, but I think if you're not careful, it's going to become a crutch for lazy writing.
Yeah, you know, there's in 1984, which is so prescient, and keeps coming back as being important, but, you know, there was something in there that they had the two-minute hate, where everybody was supposed to sit around and hate the bad guy, hate the enemy, Soviet Union or Eurasia, whichever one it was, and hate Oceania and East Asia, those are, and hate them, the two-minute hate. And I can just see creating a book. I mean, Orwell was writing about that. He wasn't trying to inspire hate, and he wasn't writing out of hatred, and he wasn't trying to, but he was trying to portray how easily we are led to hate. And I think that's, you know, there's a responsibility in there. Like you said, one of the things where we might kind of cop out, we might take the easy way out, is to make a really, really, really bad guy, because we cannot write a good enough good guy.
Yeah, and I think unless you do it really well, you are writing more propaganda than an actual story. If that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I think so. I have come across some people in a writer's group, and it was a group of people who were so angry about social justice warriors, as they call them, or something like that. But, you know, people who want, like, diversity and equality and equal opportunity and things like that, those terrible things. But that they would write stories which really kind of did seem to be about hatred and come out of hatred. And wouldn't you know it, usually the victims within these stories would be women, because I think a lot of these types of people have a lot of problems with the opposite sex, and, you know. But it was kind of frightening to see that. It's frightening to, I mean, it's difficult. Often, it's probably really hard to write a good book out of hatred. The ones that I've read were usually pretty awful, because they would be so fulminating, because there'd be no distance, because there'd really be no one to identify with. The only thing you could do in this is you could be led to hate the person the writer wanted you to hate, but there wasn't much else. And I think that's just something to, you know, when we're writing out of anger, however righteous the anger is, when we're writing out of a sense, and certainly great books have been written with the idea, like Uncle Tom's Cabin, of bringing attention to an evil being done. But I think it's, you know, it's really, you got to be really careful. What are you trying to write about the injustice, or are you trying to inspire hatred in people? And I think, you know, if hatred is what is there, and you're not just examining the emotion or examining the phenomenon, but actually trying to inspire hatred, probably time to pull back. I will say, so few writers are hateful people that I've known, and I've known many writers. I think that's that of all groups of people or professions, writers are probably less likely than most.
I think it's difficult to be creative and hateful mm-hmm. at the same time. But so where I think The Last of Us 2 is going to stick the landing is that I don't think the emotion that they're trying to inspire is hate, but that its protagonist is now being driven by hate, where she was in the first game driven by love.
Yeah, and I think that's something that it's possible to write about emotions and write characters who have emotions, and your story is not coming out of that, and your story is not trying to inspire that.
Yeah.
1984 is not inspired by hatred. It's actually trying to examine how hatred leads to fascism. And I think that's really important. That obviously we want to write about even negative emotions, but and really feel that we can do that. However, you know, we do have to examine our own purposes, and inspiring hate in people is probably not a very good purpose. There's also, I noticed, you know, there's always the obverse. So you have sort of the negative and the positive facets of an emotion. I was thinking, you know, so Macbeth is about ambition. And then, what's that one that you like, the movie you like about Aaron, what's his name, got caught in Canyonlands?
Oh, 127 Hours.
Yeah, and that's about determination. So you have ambition, which at least in Macbeth's situation was kind of a negative. The obverse of that is determination, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, but also, I mean, Aaron Ralston, who... since the movie has come out, has certainly done some questionable things. But also, I mean, just not only determination, if it's a good thing that he was, you know, an outdoorsman, especially in the desert, because if he hadn't been in that, if he wasn't in the shape, the physical fitness-wise that he was, he would have died for sure. I mean, all of his organs were shutting down to dehydration.
Yeah, I think that it's really true. That's, you know, the emotion determination is not enough to get you there. Think of the movie, or the book. I think I read the book. I saw the movie, too. The Martian. Okay, the one where the botanist astronaut gets left on Mars. And that, to me, was about a kind of quiet emotion, which was seemed very astronaut-y, I have to say, you know, this that it was both determination, but a sort of doggedness.
Yes.
That, okay, everything is destroyed. Well, I'm going to try again.
And finally, a movie, a Hollywood film that understands astronauts, that these are the strongest and these are the best that our society has to offer. They're so often in Hollywood movies, the astronauts will just break down and do something really stupid that puts them in danger, or I can't remember what it's called. There's a Jake Gyllenhaal movie and Idris Elba's in it, and it's really bad. And so the only profession that Hollywood understands worse than astronauts are xenobiologists. That these would be the most cautious.
And The Martian was kind of both of those. Yeah. So he's a xenobotanist. It's interesting because I remember Apollo 13, which was a great movie, but it's based on the real Apollo 13. There are three astronauts who were really on that. And, I remember at some point where they're, you know, have to fling themselves around the dark side of the moon and all that. They did this all with 1971
with
computers.
Not even,
it's extraordinary.
Not even a TI-83 calculator.
Just extraordinary. But there's one where, so Ron Howard, I think, was the director, and so he has them arguing about something. And the actual astronaut said, oh, actually, we never argued one thing. The stress did not make us argue. It just made us more, you know, determined to work together. And I thought, boy, that is an astronaut. Everybody else in the entire world or universe would be going crazy and going for each other's throats, and they just hunker down and do better. So it is interesting to see that, you know, that sense, the doggedness. And that's what I think, you know, there, with astronauts, there's clarity and there's intelligence, but basically, you know what, they're in a weird way, they're the ultimate survivalists too, scientific survivalists. So, but that's, yeah, that's another, because that could be desperation. I mean, when you think of what he was facing, you could go with a different emotion, and this went, that doggedness, that thing of, but that comes out of the situation. I think that's also something we want to deal with. Okay, you have this emotion, do you make it into a story? Like mine, where I was writing about the woman who becomes a spy, but basically she feels completely dispossessed. She is dispossessed. She has no home. She's got no people. And she doesn't belong anywhere. How do I make that into a story? And as I said, well, okay, I have the sense of dispossession. I create a character that would feel that. And then I have to give her a plot that either she resolves it, or she experiences it, or she, you know, works past it. But so once you have know what the emotion is, the next step, I think, would generally be creating a character, except maybe if you're horror, where the next thing you'd do is probably create a plot.
I think if you are starting out with emotion, you have to figure out, are you trying to inspire a certain emotion? Are you trying to analyze it?
Explore it?
Are your characters going to be driven by it? Because so if it's that third one, characters, if that third example is your goal, character is probably what you have to go to
almost
next.
Immediately.
Yeah. And that emotion and character kind of need to be worked on hand in hand in that case. Whereas if you're trying to analyze or inspire a plot or maybe setting, you have to very quickly figure out what it is you're trying to do with emotion.
I would say, for example, I think you're really right about it, if you're kind of analyze this, desperation, for example, which is an emotion you see a lot in stories, almost immediately, because the whole idea of desperation is there's not any one particular person who'd feel this. It's kind of a generic emotion we'd all feel in certain circumstances. You have to create the circumstance, which would be the setting and the plot. And where maybe some of these things you want to go to character first, but if it's really kind of one of those emotions that everybody would feel in a certain situation, you need the situation before you want to get to the character.
Yeah,
all of us would feel, you know, desperate when we're trapped in the pit in the pendulum.
To build a fire is always what comes to my mind.
There's almost no character there.
Any horror or like survival survival horror is a genre of video games, but any of those, it's going to be emotions like desperation or fear. And so a lot of the time, setting might be what makes the most sense to work on second. And I mean, especially in video games now, you know, they've got a whole writing staff, so pretty much everything that they start out with is going to be changed multiple times through the writing process. But
yeah, I would say with Pit in the Pendulum, you know, the desperation kind of story, yeah, the next thing is setting. What is this place where someone's being desperate?
So a video game that I think, that I can't believe I didn't think of this before, but really embodied an emotion the best is Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. The name is way too long, and what does Hellblade have to do with anything? I played the game. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's just a cool phrase. But Senua is like one of the last. I think she might be the last picked. Vikings have, Norsemen have come in and killed everyone else, but killed the person that she loved. And it's not even, I don't think it's been a while since I played it, but I don't even think it's said if this is a man or a woman or what. Senua knows for a fact that if she can't get she has to literally take her lover's head and basically go on this hero's journey and defeat Hela, the Norse god of hell, that their soul will be trapped forever. Or I can't remember the specifics, but that, and they did so many things in so well and interesting visually, because not only is she going through this process of grief, she also suffers from psychosis, and so, like, there are absolutely, like, combat encounters in that game that did not happen in the real world, in quotes. So, like, the game, I mean, there's a part where, so, like, literally she's carrying her lover's head in, like, a sack on her hip, and at one point it starts breathing. And just amazing things like that. That was such, it was such a great game, such an amazing performance by not even an actress. She was just on the development team, and the actress that they hired, that ended up falling through because she got a better job on in TV or something, I can't remember. So they were like, oh, we'll use so-and-so on the development staff as a stand-in. And then they're like, oh, no, you're just gonna play the character. And so, wild story behind the scenes about this game being created. I don't know, maybe that helped them write, you know, the emotion of grief so well. But it's also not, but it's grief in a positive way, because she's working through it.
Yeah, that's, and also she's got a quest. And I mean, that's, I think the, a couple things we might want to sort of look at is do you actually start with the emotion, or do you start with the plot thing that is going to inspire the emotion? I'm thinking with Soul Survivor, you're right in the middle. It's been months since the accident happened, so you start with the grief, you start with the emotion, and that might be why it's kind of unbearable. However, it might have been unbearable anyway if we first got to know the wife and the two young girls before they're killed, and that might have been even unbearable too. But one of the things is do you want to start with the event that is going to create this emotion, or are you going to start with the emotion? Is it embodied in this character, or is it in the, you know, like the town? There's an episode in The Crown, the television show about the royal family, where it's a Welsh mining town, and the kids are all at school, and this mining mountain, you know, the junk from the tin or coal mine comes crashing down and kills all the children, like 80 children in the school, and that is, you know, there, the whole town is in grief. You know, it's not any one character. So what do you start with? That kind of started with setting. This is a poor town. It's a mining town. And so that kind of started with setting rather than the emotion. Then the event happens, and that's where the emotion of grief comes in. So that's just one question you might look at.
Very similar thing happened in Stephen King's Town of Derry.
Yeah?
Yeah. But I think you...
Stephen King almost always starts with setting, I feel like.
I think you figured out the next podcast.
What's that?
Character death.
Oh yeah. So yeah. I'm not good at killing all my characters. So.
Well, there's the meme with J.K. Rowling when she legitimately. I'm pretty sure she legitimately did say in an interview that it's difficult killing off so many characters. But so then Stephen King and George R. R. Martin are just like, oh. Good luck with that, sweetie.
Hold my beer. So let's see. Well, the questions, if you start with an emotion, what next? And so one thing is, where do you start the story? Do you start it beforehand, like with a setting or one of the characters? Do you ease into it? Or do you start right smack dab in the middle of the grief or the emotion?
Yeah, I think to add on to that, that you also need to have a good understanding about what you're trying to achieve with this emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't know what your goal as the writer of this story is, you're not going to be able to... I mean, I guess maybe you can figure it out along the way, but But if that were the case, you probably wouldn't be starting with emotion, because it's also, I at least for me personally, that would probably be the most difficult one for me to start with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it might be easier if the next thing is, what is the conflict that caused this? Whatever mm-hmm. the emotion is. What is the conflict? What's the plot event? What's the situation which caused it? Everybody might feel kind of more comfortable with the idea of, okay, what sets this up? What starts it? Even if you don't actually have in the story and you just have to, you know, write, you know, later, it's in the backstory and later it's alluded to. But I think that that's something to keep in mind. What's the conflict that is going on there? What is the conflict that inspires it? Then character. Okay, so is the emotion embodied in one character, or is it like in the episode with the mining town? It was an entire town.
Yeah.
It's like almost an entire country, really. In that case, do you focus on the one character?
Yeah, and so, yes. So then, I mean, with character, with plot, when starting with emotion, okay, you have to figure out, okay, is this emotion going to be embodied by a character? Is it going to drive the protagonist or drive characters? Are your protagonist and antagonist going to be, you know, like two sides of the same coin dealing with this emotion? Or is this emotion going to be a theme? This is why the idea of starting out in a story with the emotion sounds like that would be too much for me, because for me there's so many things that I would have to figure out before I even get to the character or the plot from starting with emotion.
I also think that, you know, that's another question is, you know, obviously many of us are inspired to write because we're feeling something. You know, so is it coming out of us, or are we writing about a character? Like you said, is it really about the feeling or about the analysis of the feeling?
Yeah.
And, you know, many people, I think, you know, write out of a powerful feeling. I tend to think that having done that, you know, you might put it aside for a little while and come back and see. Because whenever I write, for example, out of anger, it becomes intemperate and not very artful, and it just becomes a diatribe, where if I had let the emotion sit for a while and realize that I want to analyze the emotion, I want to write within the emotion but about the emotion, I think I could probably come up with a better story.
I mean, I have an essay that is my response to The Last Jedi, and like reading it, you know, years later, it's like, okay, calm down. You were just mad that a movie did things you didn't like, and
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's good advice. I think that's good advice for life, especially with anger.
Yes, grief is probably not going to hurt anybody, but anger certainly could hurt somebody. The other thing I think that you need to do when you're writing this, what's the effect of the emotion on the characters, on the plot? And it's probably not going to stay the same the whole story. If it starts out in grief, what does it end up in?
Yes.
Presumably they have to work through the grief or what. Hamlet, in a way, starts out with grief. Hamlet's the only one in the court who seems to grieve for his father, the last king. But by the end of the story, he's moved to something else. Now, unfortunately, he's moved to death. But,
yeah.
But,
well, he got determined
yeah.
at the end, after a lot of whining and a lot of people getting killed.
Right, and other people being put into grief, but that yeah. does not stay grief. There's something else in the end, which is this determination, which is revenge, which is a sense of having completed a task, maybe. And so, how is the emotion going to change if it's the very same in the beginning as it is, and then in the end, it might seem as if the plot events really didn't have enough of an effect,
yeah.
and the character didn't change enough. If it's only that this is, I'm finally able to go visit my father's grave. I'm finally able to set aside this this symbol of my anger, you know, the trophy I got, second place trophy when the person cheated me and got the first place, and I can actually put that trophy up in the trophy case because now I'm proud of myself rather than feeling cheated and resentful. You know, something, whatever you come up with, what's something in the end which shows that the emotion has changed, just like the plot has changed and the character has changed and the world has changed. So Last thoughts.
I mean, I am definitely repeating myself, but when starting with emotion, figure out very strongly what you're trying to do, because if you want to use, you know, love as a theme, your writing process is going to be very different than if you are trying to inspire love with your story instead.
Mm-hmm.
And if instead you're trying to analyze love or whatever emotion you choose, then again, your writing process and the type of story that you are going to write is going to be very different. Which, I mean, maybe if you aren't sure what you are trying to do with this emotion, I guess at that point, then write and you'll figure it out. Yeah, the type of story you tell, the themes that you weave into it, is going to decide all that for you along the way.
Right, and so rather quickly, you know, in all of these things, setting and character, everything, you start with one, but really quickly you have to bring in the others, or you're going to have, like mine, 200-page-long character study, or the 70-page diatribe, or you know, the intellectual experiment that's completely bloodless and emotionless and boring. You know, that no matter what, each of these has to lead to all the others rather quickly. And so you can start with any of them, but you've got to move on to the others pretty quickly to have a full and complete story. So I guess that's the end. You know, whenever you start with any of these, you've got to go on to the others. Anything else?
I mean, I guess if this is what you're doing, like, that sounds like the most difficult to me. But so if you're starting with emotion, I mean, I guess good luck.
But let's remember, writers for millennia have started with emotion. So
yes.
It's just that maybe we're modernists and we no longer write that way. But it is a perfectly legitimate way to start.
I mean, actually, in a way, because I mean, literally most of the stories I've written in my entire life start out with a conversation between two characters. So the tone of that conversation is, you know, at least emotional.
Mm-hmm.
It would be emotion adjacent.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe that's what because all these things might have, you might start with a plot event, but it's about some emotion, I mean, or inspire some emotion. So wherever you start, you got to do all of them. And so, and emotion, it certainly deepens the story, which is why I think probably both of us would bring it in a little later. Just start with one of the others because it's a deepener. But definitely this is something that would make a story deeper and more memorable, especially if you end up inspiring that emotion in your audience.
I mean, so me, usually, I'm not necessarily trying to inspire an emotion. I'm not usually trying to analyze an emotion. I really use emotion more thematically. So, I don't like writing strictly within the rules of genre either.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying, you know, if you want to write a fantasy series following the genre, you know, rules and norms, I hope it's great. But my creative brain doesn't really work that way.
I think that the genre form, that's just a vessel.
Yeah.
What's in it, whatever liquid, and whether it's super meat or you know, a champagne, is what we put in, but we need the vessel to hold it. And
yeah, I think of it as more like, you know, like a starting point.
Yeah, now with emotion, I think I like to explore emotion and experience emotion within the story. And I don't think it's really analysis. I don't think it's that intellectual. But I also don't think it's visceral, that, you know, this is all about, you know, making people feel this. But rather, it's sort of experiencing it second, third hand.
Yeah, and I mean, but so, like, reading, like, I love to read, like, noir.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, give me a grizzled PI who is darkly monologuing while he, you know, solves the case. Like, I will read that all day long. It's just I'm less likely to write that. I definitely have borrowed, noir-y ideas, but...
Well, then that's it. You know, it's sort of like, just because you didn't start there doesn't mean you don't have these other things.
Yes.
You can certainly, you could start completely intellectually and still manage to inspire emotion in the story. So, okay. So that's the Spice series. So where do you start? Well, you can start with setting, you can start with plot, you can start with idea, you can start with character, you can start with emotion. But whatever it is, you always have to do all of those. So we'll come back and we can do another podcast on sort of the fundamentals, maybe the three acts, how to do a three act story or something like that. But we'll come back and do another fundamental podcast.
Thank you to Nick Weber and the Heartland Heretics for the intro and outro music. This is James Raisley. We'll be back next time to discuss another plot element.